This is real-time music playing, cryptocurrency paying, free money radio, cyber.fm.
Hey everybody, James Tiley over at cyber.fm radio. This is another special episode of Digital Bytes Radio with Team Blockchain, my good friend Johnny Fry. I feel like I'm going to sing Memory, but I know that nobody wants to hear me sing, so we're not going to do that. Maybe I'll speak it later. The lyrics to Memories, time left before the changes of our life. I bet you don't even have the lyrics right, do I? Johnny at Team Blockchain Radio with the Digital Bytes newsletter sent out recently the entire 2021 year in review. Now, I don't think we're going to be able to cover the whole thing, and I have a special idea that what I consider to be the year in review, but he did send out that newsletter. He made a bunch of predictions about 21. He goes over how accurate they may have been. Remember, it's never financial advice, but it's absolutely fun making predictions. We jumped in. He joined in with CyberFM. Next year is going to be a blast. We got the new website updated. You're going to be able to just go to CyberFM, see my face, the face.
Oh, my goodness, radio. Not your face. Not your ugly mutton chops.
Your face is on there, too. Your face is on there. My face is on there. The users are going to click on our faces and immediately listen to any show that we've ever done in rotation, as well as our old good friend Pierre. May he rest in peace. Those crossover shows are in rotation. That way, if you miss any of these, you can catch up on them, as well as the current releases that go out on the podcast. Johnny, you're going to be a smart aleck. I'm going to bring you in right now then. All right? You want to run this show? Let's do it.
Let's go for it, Jane. But don't forget to tell the listeners, obviously, you know, Cyber.fm was the first station in the world to have the foresight to start paying its listeners in tokens. So, you know, absolutely delighted. And we've got, coming up after the break, got a little bit more details. And, well, actually, it was the interview that you and I did back in July last summer, where you're explaining all about Cyber.fm, how it got started and how it pays tokens. And that's how we first met. You know, I'd been doing the blockchain radio Digital Light show for a couple of years with Pierre up in Canada. Obviously, I'm based here in the UK, just south of London. And you're based in Northern Carolina. Is that correct?
I am. You would be accurate if you said that I'm in North Florida or North South Florida. Georgia.
That's right. North Florida, South Georgia.
I almost don't know where I live. I don't know what for the U.S. residents, I don't know who the Georgia governor is. I don't know what the Georgia lottery numbers are because I live in the metropolitan area of Jacksonville, Florida. But my driver's license goes to Georgia. I'm a mess.
Oh, well. But Jacksonville, that's one of the oldest towns in the whole of the USA.
Right? I think it's number one.
Yeah, number one. Okay, so for new listeners, welcome to our weekly show. And basically what we do, Digital Bytes, is really, it's in response to a number of the accountants and lawyers and corporate brokers and people wanting to know and understand how, where, and why blockchain technology and digital assets are being used. And we've been writing it now since March 2018, so it's coming up for 4 years. And we've had a radio show going for coming up for about 3 years. And every week on cyber.fm, James and I basically go through the analysis and the newsletter, looking at the different articles. And as James said, this week, we're looking at some of the predictions that we made this time last year and giving you an update on sort of what's happened. So, yeah, James, so what was the first one?
Well, yeah, back in the day, we could say that now, right? You touched on that ESG, right? The environmental, social, corporate governance. And it was like, is blockchain going to play a greater role on that?
Okay, so I'm sure many listeners will be familiar. ESG, it's really become a much more important topic over the last year. And many, many investors, before they actually, you know, actually get involved in putting their money into a company, that they want to understand, you know, what is the impact that your company that you're, you know, looking for have money into, you know, how do you treat the environment? What's your impact on society? What are your governance? Is your business model sustainable? And back in the autumn here in the UK, in Scotland, in the beautiful city of Glasgow, it really highlighted the impact of climate change. And what we've seen is that the whole topic of ESG has become much, much more important with shareholders, with staff, and with customers. And one of the great things that blockchain technology can offer is a way to give much greater transparency. And with that transparency, people can have more certainty that the companies that they're involved with, whether they're actually investing, or whether they're actually supplying or working there, you know, what is their impact on the wider environment? And that's all sorts of different ways we've seen that. So I think that's certainly been true. We've seen ESG coming to the fore and the top technology of blockchain being used to help people identify sort of the good, the bad, and then perhaps the indifferent.
During 2021, I had definitely reduced my carbon footprint with the electric car, right?
You so certainly did.
Did I participate?
BMW.
Right? My little electric BMW. Should I have created like an ESG?
You've proved that you are having less of a carbon footprint. So effectively, your ESG credentials have improved. So I suppose, you know, you get a gold star for that one, James.
My 21 has improved. Okay. I saw our name. Is this around the Nudge Economics or I saw it a little bit below that?
Yep. Well, Nudge Economics it sounds all fancy, but all it is really, it's a way in which you are nudged, you're encouraged to change your behavior. So many listeners will be only too familiar that we no longer have one rubbish bin, trash can, garbage can, if you like. We have several, typically in the office or in our homes. So, and that's to encourage us, that's to nudge us to change our behavior so that we actually recycle. And so the idea of Nudge Economics has been around for a long time. For those that drive a car, you'll be familiar that all cars now have to have seatbelts. So they're nudging you to actually put your seatbelt on. And, you know, that way, if you are involved in an accident, then the chances are you won't be hurt as much as you would be if you didn't have it. So what we're seeing in relation to digital assets is, as we highlighted, you know, sort of Cyber FM actually will give you free tokens simply for listening. And we've seen in time.com, they listed six ways that you could earn cryptos for free. And we're beginning to see, and probably the biggest, I think, biggest example of this is probably Axie Infinity. They've actually generated the up-to-date figures on this and are actually incredible. 3 billion. We put down 1.2 billion, but we've had some research since then. So it's 3 billion of sales of people playing an online game. This isn't gambling. This is an online like video game. And they actually can then sell what they've actually played with and actually generate an income. And they've had sales, you know, Axie Infinity now being hugely successful as a company. And I think that's a good example there where people's behavior is slightly being altered and changed, stay at home, play a game and get paid as opposed to, you know, going to the office or the field or the factory.
Yeah, we've been trying ourselves to use that play to earn term. I think that's the word that's been going around. Play to earn.
Play to earn, play to pay. Yeah. Or pay to play.
So how did we get through, man, you know, I'm a latecomer to the whole Digital Bytes world. Now, we covered every single thing. It would take, I guess in February, that's where we covered the, are we really using blockchain? And the answer there is yes. And I'm jumping around. I think NFTs is a lot to talk about. I think we need to cover NFTs. In 2021, even Pierre had gotten into NFTs.
Big stuff, and,
the future is there. So yeah. I think we should jump there.
Well, obviously, non-fungible tokens, NFTs, you know, it's been fascinating because firstly, from a regulatory point of view, there is really very, very little clarity. You've seen in places like China have said we are going to basically ban, you know, the selling of cryptocurrencies. Yet digital assets in the form of NFTs, they've actively been encouraging their citizens to go out and buy an NFT on various different sort of different landscapes all around China and encourage, say, well, you can buy one of these NFTs, you can download it, you can put it on your mobile phone, and then you've got a unique picture of a particular outstanding landscape within China. Back in, say, the US or Russia or Italy, here in the UK, you've got museums, you know, like the Uffizi Gallery in Florence, where many of the beautiful Renaissance statues and paintings are actually, and probably most famous, David's Michelangelo. And there's a number of Michelangelo pictures in the Uffizi Gallery, and they've actually sold a digital NFT of a Michelangelo painted, I think, in 1568. And they sold it for $179,000. Well, that's equivalent to over 5,000 people going into the museum and paying their admission fees. St. Petersburg Museum in Russia are looking to do exactly the same thing. British Museum here in London doing exactly the same thing. So you got, you know, museums, which if I told you, you know, 18 months ago that museums would be getting involved in digital assets, you'd probably think I was gone potty or something. But we're seeing Hollywood has got involved. We wrote about how, you remember Pulp Fiction and Quentin Tarantino, who he was given all the image rights for that film by Miramax. So he then went off and sold some NFTs based on some of the cuttings that were on the sort of editor's floor. So these cuttings have never been seen. And he packaged them up in NFTs, and Miramax are now suing him because they're saying, no, your agreement with us didn't include NFTs. And he's potentially selling these things for sort of for millions of dollars. All sorts of different areas. We've seen NBA sports here in the UK. There's a number of soccer teams, or as we call them, football teams. Rugby's now looking at it. Basketball's looking at it. Probably the biggest event was an artist called Beebles, who sold one NFT for $69 million. Just incredible.
Didn't he delete that after, right? Or there was a Beeple delete that went on? I tricked you. See, John, you didn't realize I tricked you, but we just proved to our listeners that you really know what you're talking about, right? You're literally a subject matter expert in the world of finance. And the reason I tricked you and I brought up NFTs out of nowhere is because I knew that you were going to cover something that is actually a bit more important. But yeah, thank you for the, I got you with the NFTs.
Thanks a lot, James.
I was imagining your face. Like, this guy's...
I was suddenly looking, what's he talking about? Where am I going to go with this one?
Right.
That's the beauty of radio.
Look, 2022 is going to be fun, all right? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
The reason I did that was because, and you brought up Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino, I love the guy. All these museums, all these mainstream venues are entering crypto now via NFT. And you made a major touching point in 2021 about central bank digital currency. Remember... Yeah. The stable coins that are going to be created out of the EU, and we got the US dollar here. Are they, was the CBDCs, would you say that they're motivated because the NFTs went mainstream? Now that the average millionaire is going to walk into Sotheby's and bid on artwork, as opposed to trying to invest in Bitcoin. I want to know why the government, with these central, not the government, but these major banks are going to create these digital currencies to kind of stabilize the world for what normal humans want to use currency for.
Okay, so I think there's two parts to that, James. One is the governments, in our opinion, have kind of been forced, or they've kind of had their, I don't know, a cold towel put on their forehead, let's put it that way, or a sharp pin where, you know, the sun doesn't shine, as you might say. And that is they've been woken up. And Zuckerberg at Facebook, when he came out in June 2018 and said, we're going to launch a digital currency to our 2.8 billion active monthly users. Now, that's equivalent, as you've heard me say before, to something like three times the entire population of the G7 economies. So if this Facebook coin, which they called Libra and then they called Diem, if that were to get off the ground, then it puts a question mark over how much influence and control can the regulators and the governments in, you know, Switzerland, in Japan, in the UK, and even in America, how much influence can they have over their own currency, potentially therefore over their economy and interest rates and all the rest of it? And they suddenly realize, well, hang on, we need to look into this and we need to get on with it pretty toot sweet. And that's why we've seen the Bank of International Settlements, you know, claiming that over 86% of their members have said they're now running projects looking at central bank digital currencies. And as they started to look at them, they've realized it gives them a tool, the governments this is, to control their economy in a much more effective manner. And two examples of that would be, if you look at the shadow economy, this is where, I imagine that actually the majority of you listening to this radio show today are part of this dark economy, shadow economy, underground economy. And the reason that you're a part of that is that I guarantee at some stage in your life, you've gone into a bar or a restaurant and you've been really pleased with the service and you've handed over a tip. And that tip has probably gone straight into the back pocket of the waiter or the owner of the establishment. And they haven't paid tax on it. Or you maybe you paid someone to clean your car or polish your shoes or cut your grass or paint your house, whatever it may be. And it's probably said, okay, I can do it a little bit cheaper for cash. Whereas if you have a central bank digital currency and everything is digital, then it becomes much easier for the government to know and you know where the money is and who's where the money's come from and where it's going and make sure that they actually claim their tax. So that's number one. So I think it's a very powerful tool to tackle the shadow economy, which ranges, even in the US, it's about 15% of the GDP of the economy. In some countries in Africa, for example, it could be as much as 70, 75% of the actual economy. So you really don't want to underestimate the size of that economy. And if they can actually have a tool to fight it a little bit better, then that's going to be really welcome and good news for certainly the Inland Revenue. The second element for the governments is that by having a central bank digital currency, if they can move money around much faster, much cheaper, more efficiently, well, that should be good for the economy and good for its citizens. So off the back of that, we believe that you will have central bank digital currencies, which essentially will be at a wholesale level. So you won't be able to go into the Fed. Well, the Bank of France is a good example. They've said, we don't want French citizens to deposit more than 2,000 euros with a French central bank digital currency. So what it's going to do and what it has done, arguably, is leave a gap in the marketplace here. And that's for stable coins, which you said at the beginning there. And these are essentially digital. A digital wrapper has been put around the dollar, the yen, the Swiss franc, the pound, the euro. And your money is secure and backed by a pile of money in the bank, which is great. So it's just the same as if you had, you know, dollars on your debit card. But the biggest difference is actually instead of you actually going to the bank and depositing, let's say $10,000, yen, pounds, whatever, and then the bank lends that out. And that's how the banks make the money. They take your money. They give you 0.5% if you're lucky, and then they lend it out to the next person at 3.5%, and they pocket the 3% difference. But you've got no idea where the bank is lending that money to. And maybe the bank's ESG, and we were talking about this earlier on, maybe their ESG credentials, maybe they have, they don't worry so much about lending money to arms manufacturers or, you know, tobacco sellers or alcohol producers or, you know, whatever it is that you think you would rather weren't involved with. You have no say. Your $10,000 yen pounds have just gone to the bank and they often lend it. And that means that you don't know where the money is. And as we see the economy potentially running into a few bumps along the way in 2022, there is a chance that the governments may well end up having to bail out the banks like we saw, back in 2007, 2008. And maybe they will let one of the banks go and let it fail like they did with Shearson and Lehman. And if you happen to be a depositor and you're sitting on, say, a million or two in that bank, then that's not a happy state of affairs. But if you've actually given the bank and effectively they're holding your cash, think of almost in a safe, in a big bag of just cash. Okay, you're not earning any interest, but you're not earning any in any case. But arguably, a stable coin for people who've got millions, and I'm talking here now for corporates in particular, is safer than a bank deposit. But this creates a huge problem because who's going to lend the money? Because if we don't put money in the bank and it doesn't get lent out, well, who is going to lend the money to the individuals and to the companies that actually need it? Two places. One is possibly DeFi, which we could talk about later on. And the other one is buy now, pay later, which has really come out of the blocks. And this is where you buy, you know, I don't know, perhaps you go and buy a pair of jeans. And instead of paying $100 up front, you actually pay $33 every month, or we pay $36 every month for the next 3 months. So you spread the payments and you end up paying more than you would have done had you paid up front. But it's a way of spreading it, effectively getting some sort of credit.
Yeah, so I was listening to you and I was wondering, because I'm thinking to myself, even early on when you said, you know, Facebook's going to create, you know, that Libra, whatever it became now, but now they're going to like Meta. In theory, Facebook would be its own country, right? And they were effectively, like you were saying, trying to create a centralized bank coin. With Facebook being based out of the U.S. and let's say Alibaba is out of China, right? How strong, how do the two agree as to, or maybe I should ask, what is the reach that in the U.S., the Securities and Exchange Commission would have in a situation like that to say this coin is good, this coin is not good, this company broke a law, this company has some volatile...
James, you raise a really interesting question, and no one has the answer to it, unfortunately. And the reason it's interesting is that the days of national boundaries and what the Fed thinks or doesn't think, or the SEC or the FCA or in Germany, BaFin, you know, or any regulator in one domestic country, it's becoming less and less relevant, potentially, you know, with more and more of our lives being led online and the ability to effectively create, as far as the regulator or a government or a company is concerned, you don't know whether I'm listening to this from London, from Bulgaria, from Paris, from Auckland, from Sydney. You know, you can create your own virtual sort of network. You can, and you know, no idea how where I'm based, and therefore, you know, I'm here in London, and I have to comply with the rules and regulations in London. But actually, if my computer is saying that Johnny is currently, you know, residing in, I don't know, Auckland in New Zealand or in Fiji or somewhere like that, it's very difficult to track that person down, and therefore say, well, you broke the rules and regulations in London because you did some business that you shouldn't have done. And I think that we're going to see more and more people saying, well, look, the rules and regulations, when we had, you know, a quill pen and we had bits of paper and we shook hands on a deal, it's not relevant. A lot of these laws and regulations are not relevant. And they're trying to impose, if you like, analog paper-based law and systems and procedures in a digital environment. And you know, probably, and I know we'll come on to predictions in another show next week, for 2022, but in terms of looking at 2021, you know, I think the two things which are probably the most important, there's three things I think proved to be most important. Number one, we've already talked about, is NFTs. Number two is the real birth or the dawn of the metaverse. And we were talking about Facebook there. And I think the metaverse is going to become a very, very significant initially plaything, and then it's going to go on and become a really good collaborative way to train, educate, and teach people. But that, again, they're all in the ethereal, in the digital type environment. Very difficult to impose national rules and regulations on that. And then the third thing I think that this year has shown, and we talked about this in terms of, will blockchains become scalable? And I found this bit of information just incredible. And again, apologies for regular listeners. We have spoken about it before, but MasterCard did $6.3 trillion worth of transactions. And Ethereum, just one of the many, many blockchains that are out there, it actually did $6.2 trillion worth of transactions. And I think those figures were up to about the beginning of December 2020. So my point there is that we're now seeing this technology, blockchain, proving that it is scalable. And it is actually coming into our daily lives, even if we don't realize it. And we gave an example there of what HSBC with their FX Everywhere, which for many of the listeners will think, well, why do I care what FX Everywhere is and what HSBC are doing? And that's totally understandable. But in our interconnected global world, foreign exchange is really, really important, because, you know, almost everything that you look in your room where you're currently listening to me now will have come from an overseas country potentially. And in order for that good to be brought into your country where you're living, and bear in mind, this goes out to 100, this radio station is going to 140 different countries, they need foreign exchange. Well, one of the biggest settlements of foreign exchange is a bank not many people have heard of, called CLS Bank. And it was the bank that the banks use to net off what they owe each other. And HSBC are now in her offering this service, FX Everywhere, based on a blockchain platform. They're offering it to other members of CLS Bank because it's cheaper than what CLS Bank, which was developed nearly 20 years ago. So there's no surprise things have moved on. So I think it's really important, those three topics there, the NFTs, the metaverse, which we've seen a little bit in 21, but we're going to see a lot more in 2022, and the scalability of blockchains. I think that's super important, because the big institutions, as they start to realize that it is scalable, that it can handle lots of transactions and very quickly, and the FX, if you can deal in the FX market, then, you know, there's very little other assets that, well, there are no other assets, maybe apart from derivatives, that get anywhere near the sort of volumes that we're talking about on a database. And you'll remember that from your Wall Street days, James.
Yeah, I made that joke, FX Everywhere, Bloomberg Anywhere.
I remember it well. I remember it well.
I was like, I dated myself. I remember saying that. The FX Everywhere, not that they're not a sponsor or anything, but I want to say, and I want to be careful what I say, but I want to say that they want to become that monitor of perhaps foreign exchanges, where you were saying CLS Bank is the bank that loans the banks. Would FX Everywhere be the tool?
Well, look, CLS Bank is owned by the banks, and there's about 20 odd thousand institutions that deal with it. I cannot believe that all the banks will end up just using the HSBC FX Everywhere. In the same way, for those in the financials markets will be familiar with something called SWIFT, which is a bank messaging system.
Right.
And there was a similar system back in the 70s set up by Citibank in the USA. Basically, the global bank said, we don't want to deal just with Citibank. Fantastic bank. You've come up with a great system. But actually, we're going to create SWIFT, which is a not-for-profit based in Belgium. And it's a messaging system between the banks. So I'm not saying that necessarily the HSBC's FX Everywhere will replace CLS Bank. But now that they've proved that they can do it cheaper and faster than CLS Bank, CLS Bank will either have to adapt and, you know, build their own system, or maybe get a license from FX Everywhere. But I just think it shows you how some of these sacred cows, these things people say, it'll never change. You know, there's no way you're going to see foreign exchange on blockchains because they just can't handle the volume. Well, it's just proving not to be the case. But James, I am very mindful of time, because I know we've got, coming after the show, we've got the interview they did with Pierre on Blockchain Radio, and we were talking about other bits and pieces. But there's a number of other predictions that we did cover in this week's Digital Bytes. And then we went through every month we get from various different sources the most popular article based on things like LinkedIn, Medium, Facebook, Tumblr. There's a whole load of different sites, and we collated all. And we've listed for every single month the most popular article. And you know, so we've looked at Bitcoin too late to buy in January. In February, our companies really using the technology of blockchain. March, you know, we were looking, making money out of thin air. You know, is Bitcoin that? April, as you say, we talked about NFTs. And then in May, we were looking at how blockchain's been used in the real estate industry. And then in June, we were talking about decentralized identity. And does it actually need blockchain technology? And an expert from the banking industry shared their thoughts with us there. July, we returned back to NFTs because it was changing and evolving. And we were looking at some of the challenges. And then in August, as we talked earlier on, we were talking about stablecoins and CBDCs and the different cases and use cases for that. September was very much play as you earn. We had there the use of sort of challenges, I suppose, that they're facing with the online gaming and different regulations. And followed up in October, you know, one of our favorite articles, I think, was Red Light, Green Light. An interview that saw Squid Games, it was very much, you know, there are some countries which are saying, yes, we're positive. Some countries saying, no, stop, we don't want to do anything. And then finally, we wrapped up in November with self-sovereign identity. And then in December, how DeFi will enable participants to effectively reconfigure, reimagine financial markets. So it was a pretty weighty edition this week. We had just over 14,000 words going through those 12 articles, looking at the different predictions that we'd made, and trying to give a summation of you know, where we thought we'd you know, could give and point examples where the different predictions had sort of shown evidence. But yeah, if anyone wants a copy of that, they can get in contact with you at cyber.fm or myself. We're both on LinkedIn. Happily send you a copy of the review and all the different articles. But I think we better make way for, after the break, our dear friend Pierre.
This show should have been 12 shows, right? We should have just destroyed our calendar and said, how do we discuss the entire year without covering the entire year? But well, yeah, again, I think...
Mm-hmm. But James, in final, I just, you know, thank you for all your time and all your colleagues at Cyber.fm. It's been great fun. We've had some good feedback from some of your listeners. And, you know, we look forward to working with all your guys again next year. And we're already working on the 5th of January edition, where we coming up with some ideas and thoughts and areas to look out for. You know, I suppose it's a little bit predictions. These are the topics and areas which we think people should look at and address. And we'll be giving some thoughts on that. And we've got another guest, and he'll be actually from Copper, You remember we had Ralph Payne from Copper, which is a specialist company here based here in London. Well, they've opened offices in Asia Pacific, and we've got one of his colleagues talking about what's going on in Asia Pacific around digital assets. So that'll be in the 5th of January. But as I say, coming off the break, we've got, unfortunately, our dear friend Pierre Park, you know, passed away this year, but talking about, interviewing you. So it was sort of a poacher turned gamekeeper.
I think it's good for 21, right? We love Pierre. Our listeners to this day hound us privately in the background. Hey, what's going on with Blockchain Radio? And, you know, the website is down now. The Twitter is active. And I don't know, I don't look at it regularly, but I do get notifications that they're playing one of our crossover shows over and over. It's unfortunate, but it's very important to point out that one of the last things Pierre did was to ensure that you and I became friends. You know, we just naturally knew, we'll say that Pierre was the king of crypto Canadian radio.
Yep, he sure was.
He was. And there's nobody else that I enjoyed doing that crossover show. It really launched an entire audience and product for CyberFM itself, as well as effectively growing Blockchain Radio. So this show is a no-brainer. We work it out. We get all new listeners, all new interviews and guests. I'm learning. You're above my pay grade. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, I'm the old equities guy, high frequency trading. I know the markets. You talk to me about options and futures and I start to drift away. You know, it's not my thing. And I'm learning that just like our listeners are learning it on the go. So I think 2022 is going to be fantabulous. Can I use a word like that?
I think you can. I think you just did.
Fantabulous. So let's get out of here and let's bring back the show where all three of us had a good old time and we got to talk about CyberFM, right? Toot my own horn. And I'd like to, I'm going to listen myself and I'm going to envision you sitting there going, who is this guy? What? I can imagine like your eyebrows going up and down.
That was a good show. It was a good show. Right, James, we better go. And thank you once again. And we'll be back after the break. And then, as I say, be back on the waves. It'll be in the new year, in 2022.
Here's to 2022. And then here's to how we all started, coming up in like a minute.
You are listening to the all-new Cyber.fm.
Hey, all. James Tiley from CyberFM. I wanted to jump in real quick before part two of the show to add something. We chose this particular part two with Pierre because it was a milestone moment where the three of us, Pierre, Johnny, and myself, were all on at the same time. You'll notice that I sound different and speak differently. You see, shortly after the show you're about to hear, I was hospitalized for COVID. Today I'm considered a long hauler for COVID-19. My sentences are shorter, my breath is limited, and I resist the urge to cough. Oh my goodness, all the time. Not fun for radio at all. Pierre and I had the crossover show. That was featured on both Blockchain Radio and CyberFM. One was on rotation, as regular radio does, and the other was on demand for folks to tune in as they like. The show itself was great. After I had returned home from my hospitalization, I had oxygen equipment, medicine that I never wanted to take again, and a lot of time to reflect. I had finally gotten to go through some emails, and one was waiting from Pierre. Basically, it had said, "Hey, James, let's schedule the next crossover show soon." I thought to myself, oh no, this guy thinks I just up and left. See, I never got to tell Pierre that I was going into the hospital for COVID. I quickly flagged that email as a priority, and then I continued to catch up. This is where I found an email from Johnny, advising me that Pierre himself had unfortunately passed on. Now, if you're a CyberFM fan, you know that on Tuesday evenings, I host my Anything Goes show. Pierre was a colleague, my peer, and a friend as a priority. He enjoyed CyberFM just as any other listener does, and I wanted to share with you a New Year's voicemail that he had left. It conveniently shilled, if you will, Blockchain Radio, but knowing that this was a radio show, he requested Uriah Heep. Eclectic as he was, I remember having to go Google and search for a Uriah Heep song to play for him. It was the end of 2020. Bringing in 2021, and it's ironic that at this very moment, we can all agree that no matter what happens in this coming year, with pandemics, inflation, regulations, and just good old life, that we should always have fun and enjoy every moment we can. 2022 has got to be a great year for us all. So I want you to enjoy this voicemail of Pierre Bork of Blockchain Radio kicking 2020 out with a bang, followed by a part two of Digital Bytes 2021 year in review, with, of course, Johnny Fry, Pierre Bork, and myself, James Tiley.
Hey, James, it's Pierre Bork from Blockchain Radio, big fans of Cyber FM. We love what you're doing there at Cyber FM, and we're real happy to be part of it because people can learn about crypto and earn crypto at the same time. You can't get a better thing than that. You can do that at Blockchain Radio via Cyber FM. So we wish you well as you kick 2020 out the door. Let me give it a big boot myself. Bang! It's gone, or it soon will be, and I'm anxious to see it go. So we wish you well. If you want to play a song for me at some point, Uriah Heep. How about that? Anything by Uriah Heep? We'd love to hear that tonight on Cyber FM. And we wish you well. Here's to 2021. Let's make it a better one, and I'll be there. Pierre Bork, Blockchain Radio, and Cyber FM.
And we're back on Digital Bytes. Pierre Bork in Ottawa, Canada. Johnny Fry somewhere in the English countryside, so close to a pint of English ale. I am jealous. Johnny, we've got a special guest. And who have we got this week?
Yeah, well, we've got another one of our cousins across the pond, James Tiley, who I think you know actually very well, Pierre, from Cyber FM. So welcome on the show, James.
Thank you very much. I feel like I'm growing with you guys. Now I know Pierre and Johnny.
Good man, good man. And whereabouts in America are you at the moment, James?
I am sitting at, well, I'm not sitting at, but I live on the river that separates the state of Georgia from Florida.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. So you got some hot weather down there then?
Yeah, I sweat all day.
What a jolly nice thought. Well, we've had a mini heat wave in the UK. We've actually had temperatures going up in as high as 32 degrees in the last week here in the UK, which is quite incredible. It's England's a beautiful place when the sun shines, but it doesn't shine very often, but there you go. James, you wrote a really interesting article, and I'm not just saying that. I really did find it quite fascinating about how blockchain technology is being used in sort of for regulation and promotion in the music industry. And I know it's something being, using tokens. I mean, something very much at the sort of heart of Cyber FM. So really interested, just perhaps you can talk the listeners through your journey, how you set up Cyber FM and what's happening in terms of using blockchain technology in the music industry.
Well, you know, it's funny because Cyber FM back in like 2007 was built out of Wall Street. It was a way of all of us in Wall Street sharing each other's independent bands' music, because like every major bank down there had like their own band. And on weekends, that's what we would do. We would go see each other's bands. So we started developing a way to share the music during the week. And then when we had that great financial crisis in 08, we took it a step bigger and we decided to make it a business, which fast forward to today, it's all I do. But wow. it originates from Wall Street. And so it only makes sense that a bunch of fintech guys in radio wind up creating a fintech-based radio, right?
What did you play in the band? What were you? Were you on the organ, or were you a singer on the bass?
I know how to play the radio.
You know how to play the fiddle?
Right. I wish I could play the fiddle. Down here in Georgia, forget about it. I'm a New Yorker in Georgia.
That's a big ask, isn't it? Okay, so really, I know you're very, very modest, but you had a very successful career on Wall Street. But what I thought was great about this is you took an interest, you took a passion and turned it into a very successful business, and taking that sort of tech knowledge that you had and created, because Cyber FM, it's got what, over 2.3 million listeners now?
We average on a monthly basis. Yeah, I think we average around 2.3 now. That's total. That's not crypto.
No.
We have the crypto people that we feel like we're actually a good litmus for the entire cryptocurrency world. Like if you were to say 2% of your population is into crypto, I would say like 2% of our listeners are earning the crypto. So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So how do you use we'll come back to Cyber FM because it's a really interesting story, and it's a great story of someone's passion and interest turning into a business. But tell me a little bit more and our listeners about sort of the performing rights organization and perhaps, you know, how blockchain technology and sort of digital assets can be used in that context.
Right. And it should apply to any, you know, not just CyberFM, but so we wound up creating what's called Distributed Ledger Performance Rights Organization. So in America, we have what's called a PRO. And, you know, we have ASCAP, BMI, those are the famous ones, right? And in the Philippines, we have one called PhilsCAP. And then across our pond over by your house, I want to say we have what's called PRS and GRS. And they're all the same thing. They're all government-controlled enforcement to ensure that in the streaming radio, well, in our case, streaming audio platforms, the artists are getting compensated at a set fair amount. You can argue if it's fair, but at a set amount, you know, that we're kind of like taxes. We have to pay our taxes.
Okay,
our vision.
Okay, so hang on. So when I hear a song on the radio, right. The radio station has to pay Mick Jagger, you know, a couple of cents, a couple of pennies, whatever it is, either Rolling Stones to play his song, because that's his business. He's spent hours creating a song, and he's obviously very skilled with the rest of the band, and that's how they get paid. That's what we're talking about when we talk about the performance rights organizations. They enforce that payment of a couple of cents or a couple of pennies.
Exactly. You're on point.
Brilliant. Okay.
Well, and what we figured was, you know, blockchain is universal and global, right? And these cryptos that come out of blockchain are also pretty much universal and global. So think of the Rolling Stones. It's a great example, right? If back in 1963, when Keith and Mick were hanging out, do you really think that those two guys sat down and said, hey, you know, Mick, we got to make sure we register in the States. We got to make sure we register in England. We got to make sure we register in the Philippines, Tokyo. They didn't want to do all that, right? An independent band today doesn't want to have to worry about how many countries they have to register in.
Right.
They're doing it because that's where the money is. But in our case, or in when I say our, in our blockchain world, you should be able to register once,
yep,
and allow that PRO to not only represent you, but if you do belong to other PROs, why can't they plug into that same blockchain? And all of a sudden, everybody's one big, happy, global family that's actually enforcing a rule that's really never going to go away anyway.
Why wouldn't they want to all share that information, all these PROs?
And I guess that's the question that we ask even for other industries in blockchain. But we're doing it, and maybe they do want to do it. And if they do, they can come to us. I'm happy.
Okay, so I'm an independent, Pierre and I suddenly start, you know, strumming it, putting a few songs together, a few sea shanties or whatever. And we come to you and say, look, this is our band. And we can then register on your distributed ledger, your blockchain. So if it then gets played in other, if our music gets played in other countries, then we can start earning some money from it. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And as a good litmus test, it would be you and Pierre write this hit song, or even not even a hit song, let CyberFM make it a hit song for you, right? So when you get the song, we're playing it everywhere by default. So they're listening to you in Nigeria. They're listening to you in Tokyo and Russia. By default, what we're doing is we're giving you this token, which is not the CyberFM token. It's a different one. It represents mainstream for the underground, right? We're automatically treating these underground artists as if they're mainstream already. So you're getting compensated in crypto because you're into crypto and you like crypto. And that's the test. It works, right? It doesn't matter what country you live in, you're covered. And it doesn't matter. Yeah, you're able to spend that crypto in any country for the most part.
What's that crypto backed by there, James? So you give me a thousand of these tokens. What's it backed by? How do I spend it?
That's our responsibility to keep the liquidity and the volume going across both centralized exchanges. Now we're entering that DeFi world, but decentralized exchanges. We're moving through three blockchains. So it really is an economy. We have to create the economy that is geared specifically for your. You don't have to worry about the economy. You just have to worry about getting paid. We failed at our job if you're unable to cash out. But that rule applies to any crypto project, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you've got two cryptos. You've got one for the artist, one for the listener.
We do separate them, right? Because and you tend to see the, well, I want that one. We go, well, you can't earn that one unless you're a musician, right? But the Cyber FM one, we let you, the listeners earn as a proof of participation and a reward for backing up these independent artists and setting their goals aligned, right? Their goal is to be heard. That's the business. You want to be picked up by a big record label. You want to become famous. You know, we're not crypto. We're radio.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. And you made, I thought, a really interesting point about, because we were talking about this at the beginning of the show about NFTs, and you were saying that, well, NFTs are fine peer-to-peer, but you can't really do an NFT when you're streaming and it's going online, you know, and it goes to many, many different places.
Right. So an NFT is tracked on a blockchain, correct? And if Pierre creates an NFT and then he sells it to you and then you sell it to me, Pierre might have embedded some copyright tech in there where he consistently gets a recurring fee, right? Mm-hmm. But radio, for the listeners, it's very similar to a centralized exchange. If you think of it this way, if you put a cryptocurrency in Binance, for example, as it trades in a centralized exchange, that's not logged on a blockchain until it's withdrawn. So think of an NFT that's music. If it goes into a major streaming provider and is played out to the world, that's not logged on the blockchain in that scenario.
No.
So you have no way of knowing where your NFT is gone and who's heard it. So you have to go back to the original old way. You need the reporting done that updates a distributed ledger on the radio station or the streaming platform level.
Right, right. And as you point out, this streaming revenue is grown from, you know, not a lot back in, you know, back in 2006, 2007 to, you know, it's become quite a substantial sum of money. Is it 13 billion, is it?
Yeah, I put the graph in there at one point. I think it was, might be 14.6.
Wow. Wow.
That's 2020. So who knows what's going on now?
Yeah. So this is,
it's a big deal.
It's a lot of, and why do you think the other, do you think the other performing right organizations, do you think they'll, once they realize that it's possible that they can actually share information and make it more efficient for the bands that represent? Because go back to the Rolling Stones example, presumably the Rolling Stones are on the Philippines performing rights, the US, you know, the ones over here in Europe, that they, someone's having to manage all of their rights. And that can't be cheap.
Right. Now you've got a whole money manager involved. Now there is one big one in the US that has tested blockchain technology with one big one in the UK. And it was in April of 2017. They last mentioned it publicly in December of 2017. And we all know there was a big, big hype going on back then, right?
Yep.
I have not heard any updates from them since. And the last update that we had heard was, well, we're using blockchain amongst ourselves for the US to cover the UK, but it's still based on the honor system as well. So right. If I hold a personal opinion, it's not going to be that great of one. That's what we want to improve.
Okay. And presumably the token, you know, what you're doing, whilst it is, I believe it's unique. I've not come across another radio station. You've possibly taken a leaf out of the book of the loyalty schemes that we see for the airlines and the credit cards. What are you doing? You're trying to encourage your loyal listeners to keep listening to you. Because if they do listen to you, you're going to reward them. You're going to pay them in a token. Have I understood that correctly?
Yeah. I call it a reward point. Right. You earn your reward points, like on a, you earn your miles on a credit card. you earn your points on like Doritos or Pepsi, right? They all do it.
But there's other. Are you aware of other radio stations that have some sort of reward system like this?
I am not. There's a few that came out that wound up playing Cyber FM in their system, and I thought that was cute. Yeah. But they're gone.
But I wonder why more radio stations, and indeed TV stations, I wonder why they don't actually have that. You know, we're seeing it so much in other industries.
Well, I have an honest opinion. It's going to be, and maybe I'm doing it wrong, but we're using our revenue, right? We're budgeting we're adding into our budget. So if we earn $27 million in 2021, you know, we pay for servers, we pay for marketing, we pay for our licenses and all of that. We're including our crypto liquidity from our revenue. It's another expense. And I guess a lot of companies aren't willing to really take on another expense. Fortunately, we've been healthy enough for the past 5, 6, 7 years where we can afford to do that, honestly. Okay, but it is an expense.
But presumably, do you have better data about your listeners, would you say? So I'm an advertiser now. I'm Coke. I want to come to you. And right. I say, well, look, I want to advertise on Cyber FM. And you say, well, if you do, this is our listener profile because we know, because we're rewarding them with tokens. We know some guy, you know, who's, this is his gender. This is his, you know, some guy, this is his sex or whatever. This is his age profile. And he makes up in the UK and we've got 10,000 of those in Europe, for example. Do you have that granular data about your listeners that perhaps other radio stations wouldn't necessarily then?
I would say that we're able to accept the granular data that most radio stations do have, with a caveat. There's, because in the blockchain world and the crypto world, there's a lot of talk about anonymity. So if you choose to be anonymous, where we don't know your email address, for example, we still are able to collect, you are an Android 8.5 listener in the gateway of South London, and you are interested in whatever data that you choose to allow us to collect while still remaining anonymous. And of course, we have the traditional ways where you submit your email and your name, and then we can say Johnny likes to shop for sneakers in London, and they will push a sneaker ad. But yeah, we need to collect that type of data. The minimum amount of data that we need to collect is who you are technically, like an IP address, and what you listened to, for how long, and how long you listened. That's the government requirement. And right. The data, any more data that we can get while protecting you, because we're big about protection. You know, there's a lot of social media controversies going on about data mining. We don't want to go there. We don't want to do that. But it is important for Pepsi to know the 45-year-old males who fall in this category like Pepsi. And that's who we got to push this to.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Because you're giving people crypto, you know the fact that I'm in London as opposed to New York, and therefore if Pepsi say, look, we want to get more people in London, you can say, well, this is our listener profile. We don't know their names and their sexes and their date of birth, something like that necessarily, because they haven't all told us that, but we do know that they're in London. And so that gives the advertisers a bit more sort of feeling for where their adverts are going to be listened to.
Here's a unique one for you, which we don't talk about a lot, but in the Cyber FM mobile app, there's something called driving mode. And when you turn on driving mode, it kind of overwrites. We do that same thing that Netflix and Amazon does, where after like 4 or 5 hours, we're like, hey, are you still there? Are you still awake? Right? Because we need you to be alert when you're hearing an ad. When you turn on driving mode, we can identify that you're on a long road trip, or maybe you're a truck driver, right? And that is a very valuable piece of information. Because if you're a family going on a road trip for the next 9 hours, you're going to stop and look for fast food, for example.
Yeah.
That's a unique one that we pull.
Well, okay. Brilliant. Well, look, Pierre, you're a radio man. This is, you know, interesting because James was a money man like me, and now he's coming to your world of a radio man. What do you reckon to all this?
Well, I love the fact that James and both of you from the money background, we're talking radio here, and I'm from the media background. I'm going to money because I've got grand plans, and so we're talking with people that are in the investment banking and you know, the startup fundraising. Anyways, that's a different story. But James is great. James, for the interest of our listeners, he and I do a show called Crossover, and we record that every couple of weeks, and it appears both on Blockchain Radio and Cyber FM. The fun, of course, is that Blockchain Radio is part of Cyber FM's offering through its app. So if you go to download Cyber FM, which I highly encourage, you're going to get your full gamut of music and anything else that tickles your fancy, but also Blockchain Radio, where, and James is aware of this, you can earn crypto while you learn about crypto. And that's the fun part about having Blockchain Radio on Cyber FM. So I highly encourage you to do that. James is a great conversationalist, but he's a rocker too. And fantastic choice of music. So James, we'll be listening for you again on Cyber FM and as well here on Crossover. Just thanks a lot for joining us here on Blockchain Radio. Much appreciated.
Yeah, I'm always happy to jump on Blockchain Radio. And, you know, real quick, Pierre, I was helping out somebody in Indiana last night, and they were so happy that they were speaking to me, as you know, call it humbling, if you will. And he said to me, "Yeah, man, when I don't catch your 10X shows, it's because I'm listening to Blockchain Radio."
All right. All right. I love that. It was absolutely
a true story.
So I love that. That's fantastic. Well, look, you've just made my day, James. So we're going to wish you a great day. And thanks for joining us here on Digibytes, Digital Bytes. And we'll look forward to our next crossover as well sometime in the coming days. So, Johnny, that's it for us this week. Just before we sign off, where can folks get a copy of Digital Bytes in their inbox?
Excellent. Yep. Well, all you got to look on LinkedIn for me, Johnny, JONNY Fry, and you'll see my contact details, or you can see Pierre on LinkedIn, on Pierre Bork on LinkedIn. And just email one of us and we'll send you a copy of Digital Bytes every week, which is looking at how, where and why blockchain technology and digital assets are being used in different industries and different jurisdictions all over the world.
Excellent. And that's it for us. Another edition of Digital Bytes here on Blockchain Radio. For Johnny Fry in England, I'm Pierre Bork, and our special guest, James Tiley, this week. Have a great week. We'll be back again soon right here on Blockchain Radio.